Hello. On this podcast, we talk about movies, their faults, their flaws, and their plots. So, expect some spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle.
I'm John, and my least favorite dinosaur is the Brontosaurus, because it's been confusing paleontologists since its first discovery.
I'm Eric, and my least favorite dinosaur is Barney. I don't like how he teaches us to play pretend, ABCs, and 1-2-3s, and how to be a friend.
I'm Richard, and my least favorite dinosaur is the Glavinus, because anything that's giant, breathes fire and has a sword for a tail and kills me that many times, I'm just not friends with anymore.
All right. And looks like we're going to be filling plot holes today for a movie that involves dinosaurs. And what are we filling these plot holes with?
Well, obviously, John, we're filling the plot holes with a shoehorned message about how your family is your family and has to stick together through thick and thin, even if you hate each other and all your mom does is scream.
No, it's definitely T-Rex pee.
What?
Eric, how did you get all that T-Rex pee?
You don't want to know. Seriously, don't ask.
But I have so many questions.
Well, so did the audience, Richard, but we're running out of time. We got to move on and budget.
All right. So we are talking about Jurassic Park 3, the third of the original Jurassic Park trilogy, the one that ended it for a while. So, Eric, you want to tell us what this movie is about, besides dinosaurs?
Oh, well, there goes my plot synopsis.
Oh, sorry.
I'm kidding. I actually made one. I'm not making one up on the spot because I forgot about it. Jurassic Park 3 is the story of Alan Grant and how he is running that lucrative paleontology speaking circuit. Dr. Grant is approached by a wealthy, we need to stress wealthy billionaire, who convinces Dr. Grant to visit one of the five death islands. You know, one of the islands that the original Jurassic Park took on, Island Nublar, or Isla Nublar. They get to this island and find out that this wealthy billionaire needs to find his son, who has been surviving for 2 months on a death island by himself. And then we learn that this billionaire isn't in fact a billionaire, but he is looking for his son and was trying to convince someone who's been to the island to help him look for his son. Unfortunately, Dr. Grant hadn't been to that island, but well, whatever. After that point, it is a continuous action sequence where it is slightly dispersed with a little downtime, but don't worry, they get to the next action piece as soon as possible. I mean, you really don't have time to wind down. Ultimately, everyone is saved, and oh yeah, there's dinosaurs. And the family plot line, or something.
Not everybody's saved. We don't get to save those unnamed mercenaries.
Don't worry, they're just there. They were there. They're there to show that dinosaurs are dangerous.
One's name...
It's like that black guy.
One's name was Dinobite, and the other one was Dino Chew.
They were fodder, John. To be crushed between our little feet, or the dinosaur's feet.
All right.
But basically, they serve the purpose of... Oh, there was a black guy. Oops.
Yeah, he was the fourth death in the movie.
I was going to say, it's like the first Jurassic Park where they just kill him right off the bat. But let's not compare Jurassic Park 3 to a much better movie. And oh yeah, they get off the island. I don't know if I said that.
Instead, let's get some movie facts.
All right. So this was released on the 18th of July in 2001. It was also once billed as Return to the Island. But because they changed which island it was on, they had to drop the name for that one. Had a $93 million budget. It earned $50 million back in its opening weekend and grossed in the U.S. $181 million, And then worldwide, we were at 368 million. Even a bad Jurassic Park film earns money, guys.
It's those dinosaurs. Everybody loves a dinosaur.
And one of the reasons that this movie has quite so many issues is because about 6 weeks prior to primary photography starting, they completely got rid of whatever script they were using and decided to write a new one. And that's what we have. They called in Michael Crichton to work on that new script for them. And after about 3 days, he says, "I can't work with you people," and left. And then we got this.
He probably had to go work on ER or something.
Or Timeline. That was about that time period, wasn't it?
Timeline was...
I think that was late 90s.
No, Timeline was going to happen 2002, 2003?
Yeah, so this came out in 2001.
Oh, you're talking about the movie.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the book.
Yeah.
Because that was in 1999.
Yep.
I haven't seen the movie. For another time, we'll do a Michael Crichton series.
There's a lot of Michael Crichton movies. We could do it.
No problem.
There's not a lot of great Michael Crichton movies.
Which means there's a lot of plot hole.
I mean, think about it. There's...
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Andromeda Strain was pretty good.
And Andromeda Strain.
Was that a cable TV movie?
No, that one's just an older one. That was like 1970s.
All right. So, should we get into those plot holes?
We probably should. And we are getting our plot holes from IMDb and movieplotholes.com. So, who wants to start first?
Well, guys, when celebrating Eric's return, Eric explains he followed Mr. Kirby's cell phone jingle. Then they turn around and see the Spinosaurus standing there. It would have been impossible for the Spinosaurus to have gotten there unnoticed, since a T-Rex creates impact tremors with every step when it walks, and a Spinosaurus is bigger, according to Grant, than a T-Rex. So, sneaky dinosaur. It is a ninja Spinosaurus, or Spinosaurus.
It's almost like large or tall people can't walk silently? I mean, if it's a predator, it has to have some aspect of stealth. I mean, they also complained about how the... if we hearken back to ye olden days in the first Jurassic Park, I believe people complained about that T-Rex showing up silently too. It's almost like predators are okay at sneaking up on things.
Predators can be quiet, more quiet when they want to be.
I'm just going to think, or I'm thinking, it also depends on what material the dinosaur is walking on. Because wasn't the T-Rex in the original Jurassic Park walking on concrete? Whereas the Spinosaurus was walking in a forest?
Yeah, so, that is a good point. We didn't talk about that before, but yeah, they was walking on the paved road.
The T-Rex. So that's going to transmit vibrations and everything easier, whereas the forest floor is going to be soggier. But, you know, it is an ambush predator, much like a crocodile.
But we'll get to that later. Well, how about this one? The party have no regular food supplies, but they only take some of the food from one of the vending machines, even though at that time they have no reason to hurry.
I feel like there's always a slight bit of hurry going on. Like, they keep moving because the longer they're there, the more likely they are not going to be there in the way they don't want to leave. By being eaten by a dinosaur.
Okay, I was waiting for you to get to that.
Yeah. And so they keep moving. And mostly they're not looking for food supplies. Like, they're not trying to stock up rations. Here, they're just... There's looks like there's some food.
Snack time.
Gotta keep your energy up.
And nobody's going to complain about you breaking into this vending machine.
Nope. They're just kicking it in. Grab what they can carry. And keep moving.
So remind me, guys, in the movie universe, does InGen still exist at this point, or had it been bought out by the one from Jurassic World? I can't remember the company.
I'd assume it would have been bought out by the one in Jurassic World, because InGen was
they basically pretty much went bankrupt after the second movie, right?
Yeah. Like, they were already in danger in the second movie. They were taking that risky... stage dinosaur attraction That was their attempt there. Between the two, they're probably pretty dead.
When they couldn't do the San Diego Zoo, they tried for SeaWorld, and that didn't happen either.
I'm trying to think of what the documentary exposing the dinosaur SeaWorld. Blackfish. Like, because that wasn't Blackfish, so what would this one be called? Like, Black Rex?
That's racist.
It would have just been called Tyrannosaurus Park.
Oh, Tyrannosaurus Park.
I would probably say Dinosaurs Inc. or something like that.
All right. So, what are you going? What were you heading towards with this engine being out of?
I was just, the only reason I brought that up is like it's not like they can go after them.
Oh no!
For breaking company property,
breaking and entering.
Except the vending machine was actually going to be serviced by a third party company anyway.
Oh, they might still be around. They're probably still collecting bills on it too.
Well, don't they have to go at, well, probably.
Or they got a large settlement.
They just got a large settlement because it was declared a lost asset.
Yeah.
And just to tie into the first plot hole. So the food in the vending machines has been there for many years, not refrigerated or preserved. Yet the candy bars and chips they take are not melted or edible. So.
Melts in your mouth. It's
like 8 years old?
Not in your vending machine.
Yeah, I mean, so not preserved, but like sugar is a preservative. And a lot of food that's in a vending machine is the kind that lasts longer anyways without being refrigerated.
It's certainly past its best by date.
And it's probably not great tasting and in the very least stale.
But it's certainly edible.
Listen, all they have to do is steal some Twinkies because everyone knows those will survive a nuclear blast, and the dinosaurs didn't. So, Twinkies are your best bet.
They didn't have any Twinkies, but they did have granola bars, chips, and at least a bag of M&Ms.
I think they had a Hershey's bar, too.
That one's probably the one that would have tasted like would have been the worst off. And then followed Hershey's by that by the M&Ms. Wax. The M&Ms probably would have melted. I mean, they have their whole thing, but it is a tropical climate. And though it was double protected in a structure with the vending machine itself, those probably weren't the best tasting M&Ms in anyone's life. But you got to keep your sugar levels high. Otherwise, that T-Rex is going to get you.
No, the T-Rex is a chump, this movie.
Now, speaking about eating, predators hunt to get a meal. But the dinosaurs chase the surviving humans rather than staying to eat the one they have already killed. You know, food that they're just going to leave lying around and that scavengers are going to come up and steal.
Well, while in general I agree with the sentiment that predators hunt for food, the particular instance that I believe we're referring to here is when the raptors kill one and set it up to use as a trap to get the humans because they're hunting for their dinosaur eggs. And so they have an ulterior motive. It's specifically to get the other humans to come here. I mean, we've already established that the raptors are smart here.
So I've also heard it that people complain about the T-Rex in the beginning of the movie, how it's at its kill site, and then it starts chasing the humans. So let's tie that one back or into it as well.
Okay.
Why would a T-Rex leave a kill?
Okay, because predators, you know, eat meat and they hunt for food, but they also enact violence for other reasons. One is to defend territory and kills. Strategy among some scavengers is to try and get close and have a lion come chase them away while their friend goes and grabs some of the food and runs away with it. So the T-Rex was probably just like, Hey, get away. My food.
Back off.
And then, you know, it runs into the, Spinosaurus and has to fight that because that might get its food. And also they're probably overlapping territory right there. It was going to happen eventually.
So I thought of it a different way. I think that the kill that the T-Rex was at wasn't actually the T-Rex's kill. It was a different dinosaur, and he just stumbled upon the carcass, the scavenging carcass, and saw four fresh bodies and thought, you know what? I'd like a little snack on the go. Let's go after that.
It's like, oh, this one's kind of ripe. Hey, fresh meat. Bite-sized snacks.
If you look at it, it's actually already been cleaned out. Like, the T-Rex isn't going to be getting any sustenance from it.
Yeah, it can crack open those bones.
But think of some people poppers. I think that's what dinosaurs would call chicken nuggets.
People poppers?
Yeah, people poppers.
They're not actually made from real people any more than McDonald's chicken nuggets are made from real chicken.
It's not as good as the Soylent Green, sticks.
So our first one on plotholes.com is that a man is sent onto the beach to call for Alan Grant before the Army and the Navy even reveal themselves. But why? Like, what use did this serve? I mean, it makes for a nice reveal for the survivors, but puts everybody in danger.
Well, I mean, he had a megaphone and he wanted to go first. It made him feel special.
Oh.
Was that the husband of Dr. Slater?
Or Dr. Sadler?
Or was it just a Sadler? Yeah.
I don't think it is.
I don't believe so.
I don't, because you don't see her husband for too long, but it is a very different looking guy, I think. So, like, I never connected those two before in my mind. I thought it was just, you know, guy there, he's got the megaphone, probably.
Honestly, in the way I've got this is they've probably got, like, a whole bunch of different guys on different locations around the edge of the island where they think the party might be likely to see them. So that they can have that guy with the radio go, hey, send the Army and Navy to this beach. Because they don't know where exactly the survivors are. You have to have, you got to watch it and you got to spread people out. So drop one guy off on the beach with a helicopter while you go around to the other beaches to check on what's going on. Have somebody radio in when they found the survivors.
I also feel like he was probably outside of the command chain and is a civilian, but high ranking, like in the State Department. And he just wanted to be able to say that he's been on Island Sorna.
It could be. Yes.
So my biggest problem with that though, is why the heck is he wearing a suit? Like, that is so impractical.
He's not going very far.
He wasn't issued combat armor.
Throw on some khakis or something. You don't go to a jungle in a suit.
He's not going in the jungle. He's just going to be on the beach.
You shouldn't go to the beach in a suit either. I'm just saying.
He's not going to be there long, like I said.
Do you know what that salt water is going to do to his loafers?
He doesn't care. He gets paid
too much. Ruin them.
He gets paid too much. He just wants to stand at that island, and this is his only chance.
This is below his pay grade.
Yeah, he is specifically going below his pay grade to be on this island to say he's been on the dinosaur island. He's going to go home to his kid, and he's like, were you there? And his dad's like, yeah, and I still have sand from the beach in my loafers. Then he could bottle it.
Mostly it's so that he'll have the really cool story to tell at the neighborhood barbecue in his gated community. Let me tell you about the time I was at the dinosaur island and saved Alan Grant. And it's going to be like the only story he tells for 3 years.
Probably five.
At least until Jurassic World comes out.
Yeah, that totally stole his thunder because now everyone can go to Dinosaur Island.
But maybe we should move on to the next plot hole.
Yeah, let's get our next plot hole.
So this one from movieplotholes.com. When a man approaches you claiming to be the CEO of a massive business corporation that you've never heard of and asks you to do something very dangerous for a large sum of money, would you expect payment up front and do a huge amount of research before believing him? Grant apparently didn't. He thought waiting until after the ordeal to cash in the fake check and not even Google Kirby Enterprises to check its authenticity was a fantastic idea. I mean, seriously, a 30-second search on the internet and you would have seen it didn't exist. And that one's pretty easy to solve.
Grant is desperate.
Grant is desperate.
Grant's desperate.
Also,
he also hates computers.
Yeah. We know specifically he hates technology, and also he's old, so he probably doesn't even know how to use Google.
Next thing, any job that's offering you money before you do before you finish work is a scam. Just saying. You get paid after you do work.
At least split it up. Like, 25-75 or 50-50.
And he...
And it's not like he hasn't taken large checks from shady businesses to go to islands before.
And, like, they spent a good amount of time establishing that it wasn't, in fact, super dangerous. He was just going to be in the airplane, like, looking out the window and looking at the dinosaurs. And a bit of him really wanted to go. Like he didn't want to admit it.
But, I mean, he doesn't want to have to be, you know, go and do tour guides on dinosaur islands to get a living. I mean, he probably earns $2,000 or $3,000 a year just teaching.
Oh. Speaking of which, Tom Lehrer is still alive.
I know. Isn't that great?
Wait, Tom Lehrer is still alive?
Yeah.
He's my next Shirley Temple.
All right.
You'll have to explain that one to John.
Okay. So, John, a while ago, this is before Shirley Temple died, but I was wondering, I wonder if Shirley Temple's still alive. I bet she's dead. A quick 30-second Google search later, and no, Shirley Temple was in fact still alive. She then died 2 weeks later, which made me feel like a jerk, but at the time, Shirley Temple was still alive.
All right, so everyone mark your calendars. Is Tom Lehrer still alive long after the release of this episode?
Which is probably... Is this going to be our 2-year anniversary? Or I guess... Yeah, 2-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy 2-year anniversary, guys.
All right. Well, that's all the plot holes, but then there's a bunch of plot contrivances. You know, like where things are convenient to make the story happen.
It shoves the plot along.
Like, we have a phone. This phone, this satellite phone, gets eaten by a dinosaur, still gets signal while inside the dinosaur, is still loud enough to be heard 100 yards away in the dinosaur, leaves the dinosaur through the usual method, and still works.
It's a Nokia that is established in the film.
It has specifically the Nokia ringtone, and I'm going to see if this will work. So
you have a Nokia phone from a dinosaur? I will theorize that a Spinosaurus's stomach and internal organs are excellent reverberation chambers just by chance.
Well, it's because a Spinosaurus is, in fact, a water creature, so it has to have an air bladder so it can stay afloat, like crocodiles do and whatnot. So it's a sounding board.
And I will point this out as one of those rare instances of the movie predating more accurate dinosaur facts, because at the time, Spinosaurus was all land, big dinosaur thing. And then in 2014 was when they went, oh no, this is actually a water creature. And so, I mean, turns out that they already had the air bladder in there to make the reverberations for the cell phone the whole time. Movie got it right, just didn't put him in the water.
I mean, we assume that it was the Spinosaurus that ate the people in the boat, though, right?
We do, yeah.
All right, next contrivance.
Well, the Spinosaurus, speaking of, can ram into a giant steel fence lined with barbed wire and huge metal spikes and destroy it with ease. However, a small rusty old door held shut by a couple of locks, impossible to open, and of course destroying the small building around it is very impractical. You gotta make a decision. Is this a giant strong monstrosity or not?
Well, I mean, you're comparing...
You skipped the part, Richard.
Well, see,
they said make a decision.
They did say make a decision, Spielberg, but I'm going to be more accurate because Spielberg was just a producer, not actually directing here.
Isn't he like a producer on just anything Jurassic Park? They just kind of throw his name in there.
He is, in fact, because he owns the major Kickstarter donor on most Jurassic Park films. Yes.
Jurassic or Steven Spielberg likes his dinosaurs.
So I'm going to make these people seem less stupid by dropping their stupid comment.
All right. Well, to me, it's kind of like the question of, could you drive through a fence in your car? Then could you drive through your front door with your car and be the same?
It depends on whether you're trying to retrieve something from inside that thing.
Yes. It's trying to go through the fence and then it goes through the fence and it does a body check. and it can bring its weight in, and it gets a running start. And then, you know, it's a small building, so it can't really get its full weight into it, and it's trying to get stuff out.
And if it just knocks the building over on top of the stuff that it's trying to eat, it doesn't get any food out of this.
Yeah, so I think it's mostly, you know, dinosaurs like, ah, oh, this is just too much work.
It does a quick evaluation on the not getting paid enough for this scale.
So I'm going to use the second Jurassic Park movie as a kind of a baseline. That came out in 1997. So I'm going to assume that InGen went bankrupt in 1997, 1998. So this movie came out in 2001, which means that that park or all the equipment there and just the facilities have been sitting vacant, being subjected to tropical weather and hurricanes and whatnot for the span of 4 years without any repairs or anything. So I would think the outside fence, which is not protected at all, would be more run down than the door protected by the building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does definitely have quite a bit more shelter there to protect it from the elements.
And also, a predator will try and avoid injury wherever possible.
Injured predators don't live very long.
Nope. They're very low, they're risk averse, if they can be. I imagine the Spinosaurus just discovered it could knock down the fence at a previous time, and that's why it was used to, like, it thought of, hey, I can just go through the fence.
Did it run through, like, the same hole that, Grant and the kid ran through? Well, it didn't run through that same hole, but, like, the same section?
Yeah.
So maybe that played into it as well. All right, so the next plot contrivance. Ellie somehow managed to convince the Army and Navy that Alan Grant and a bunch of other nobodies are trapped on Isla Sorna, having willingly went there themselves illegally, and then manages to convince them that they are worth saving, so much so that they should send hundreds of tanks, boats, and helicopters. At this point, I was surprised the president wasn't there, waiting to shake their hands on the beach outside of Air Force One. Well, first, Air Force One can't land on a beach. So there, snot-nosed internet writer.
Second, the president cares too much about his suit to stand on the beach.
And third, Ellie's husband works for the State Department. We cover that when Alan Grant goes over and gets frustrated because he can't get the parrot to say his name anymore. Specifically, her husband deals with international treaty law, which may perhaps cover, like, an island covered with dinosaurs that are probably protected by, like, four or five different countries.
You know, including Costa Rica, which owns the island. But and then, you know, there's the U.S. company that bought it.
Leases it.
And then there's all these dinosaurs on it.
And I know, like, they make a big to-do with, like, the UN and the U.S. government are having a tiff about what needs to be done with it.
Yeah. So, basically, it's less that Ellie was dependable and more that Ellie married into someone who had contacts and could move some stuff.
And probably it's a, we're going to show up, we're going to come and we're going to grab these people and we're going to get them off here before it becomes an international incident, because that's not worth dealing with when we can just come in, grab these people, and leave.
Oh, so it wasn't hundreds of tanks and ships, and it was navies and marines. Those were the two people involved.
Yeah. And it was, you know, probably like one destroyer.
But yeah, so it's who you know, or who knows who you're married to, who you're friends with, who knows someone. But if you own a paint shop, just don't let your son go paragliding by Dinosaur Island.
Yeah, turns out, bad idea.
That was the whole point, though. The name of the company that was doing the parasailing was called Dino Soar, as in, like, soaring through the air. So they made their whole business plan about traveling close to these dangerous islands.
I suspect that they were on a cruise, and this was a day excursion on one of the ports they were at. And was probably not in the initial brochure and was just a, hey, let's do this. That looks fun.
Just a guy standing on the pier with this dinosaur sign hanging up.
Yeah. Look, I've been on cruises. People do this.
All right. Do we want to cover any of these other two?
We brought up how ridiculous it is to bring out the megaphone. But we've got a guy on the beach with a megaphone. And Amanda Kirby on the beach with a megaphone.
She's been established to be pretty worthless.
And I suspect that the guy with the megaphone is solely there to use the megaphone once he sees movement.
And he has soldiers behind him.
Yeah, and he has soldiers to back him up.
You and what army? Me and this army. You know, that's what the dinosaurs would say if they could talk.
And yeah. He would say, after they killed the dinosaur, he'd been like, take that, you dinosaur.
They would have.
Now extinct. Again. Or some pithy one-liner.
Take that, you dinosaur.
He has this guy, like, we're building him up. You know, he's got a little notebook. Like, when he found out where he was going and what he was going to do, he pulled out a notebook and he's like, this is what I'm going to say if it's a T-Rex. It's like, who's the king now?
Hail to the king, baby.
Yeah, something like that. This guy was prepared.
But more to the point, I don't think there's really anything else we've got on the plot hole side. Thoughts on the film?
So it is my least favorite of the original Jurassic Park trilogy. Possibly my least favorite Jurassic Park movie.
Or Jurassic franchise?
Yeah. Like, every time I watch it, I'm reminded about...
Jurassic Galaxy was bad.
Well, that's not actually a part of the franchise. If we did include it, it would be worse than Jurassic Park 3, but not by much. I mean, there's a lot more pointless walking in Jurassic Galaxy.
That's just a lot more pointless movie, John. You can be accurate.
That's true. It could have been a webisode.
It probably started as a webisode. But, like, so the first time I watched this was when Jurassic World was about to come out. And me and John discovered that I just never watched it. And we were like, well, I'm going to watch it before Jurassic World happens so I can say that I've seen it. And then I very promptly forgot like 90% of the movie until I woke up today after napping on the couch and John was in the middle of watching it. And then I watched the rest of it and I'm like, now I remember why I don't remember very much. It's not worth remembering.
So, John, did you see it in theaters then? Richard just admitted that he didn't.
I did not see it in theaters.
I did see it in theaters.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think I liked it at the time.
Yeah, a theatrical release might be more helpful to it.
Of course, I think I would have just... No, I had just finished junior high, so I wasn't even a sophomore in high school yet. If I went that summer.
I'm trying to think if I managed to see any of the... original trilogy in theaters, and I don't think I did.
I'm pretty sure I saw 2 and 3 in theaters. I would have been much too young for Jurassic Park 1.
I don't.
Because I remember renting it.
No, I definitely didn't, because I remember that my parents rented Lost World. I remember we watched that.
Yeah, I feel like I watched it as a rental first, and then 3 was the same. But yeah, I don't know. It has, like, structure problems, and, like, you don't even care about these mercenaries who get killed, so their deaths don't matter.
And I mean, I care. I had more emotional feeling about the lawyer in the original Jurassic Park than I did with the fodder. Like, they're just there to pad the death count.
Yeah. And there's, like, little things like, you know the term Chekhov's gun?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in this movie, when we're first introduced to the mercenaries, they have this rifle with the explosive-tipped ammunition.
Oh, that does nothing?
It's never used at all in the film after that. It's like, it introduces them and then nothing.
Turns out they should have used that gun the whole time.
Yeah, like, or at least it could have shown up. Or, like, when I first watched it, I remember thinking that maybe the mercenaries were kind of bad guys.
Kind of like InGen in the second movie then.
Yeah, well, or like... They're mercenaries, but part of their thing is they're helping out the rich guy, but really they're going to try and take him... Take him hostage.
And was everyone lying in this? Like, so the head mercenary, the guy who was in charge of recruiting the other mercenaries, he lied about being, like, I think he said he was a travel agent or something.
No, he's a contractor. So he's the guy you call to get in contact with the mercenaries.
Which could be true. I'm
pretty sure he said in the movie he was a travel agent. So I was just as I was watching him, I was thinking, is, like, no one telling the truth?
There's a lot of lies. Alan Grant tells the truth.
He also says he doesn't need to do this job to survive. He definitely does. The speaking circuit's not working for him.
That's true. And he did say that nothing could drag him back to the island. And a check certainly did. Sells out his morals quick.
He has integrity. It just means his price is very high.
The kid doesn't lie.
Did we ever have
to... He lied about surviving.
He totally survived, though.
A kid is not going to survive 8 weeks on that island, which I think they could have done a little bit better about, like, showing that.
Maybe a kid wouldn't.
It's just like, oh.
But a Boy Scout would. A Boy Scout who...
Is he a Boy Scout?
Yes.
Did he even tie a knot?
He had to have at some point. They don't introduce it, but we also know that he's well-read on the subject.
Listen, there's book smarts and then there's street smarts. And there's no streets there and he didn't have any books, so...
But he'd read the books before.
He was just out of his element.
I think he's adaptive. Like, he knows which dinosaurs were made and he knew all about the details about him.
Except for Spinosaurus.
Which implies to me that Spinosaurus was probably like a baby around the time of the Lost World. And because they were, you know, they'd find a new sequence and they'd start raising it because they don't know what it is until it pops out. And so that was probably in that kind of group of eggs.
That's why it was here at Site B.
Yeah. And it would have been moved to the main island if they, you know, had found out about it before everything fell apart.
Before it all went horribly wrong.
So this is kind of off topic. But a problem I have with Jurassic Park 3 is it doesn't give you any time to rest as like an actual movie. It just is moving from action scene to action scene with very little actual progression in between.
Yeah, there's not much. It's just, you know, set piece.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing, that bird sanctuary or whatever, that came out of nowhere.
It came from the book,
but like...
Wasn't it originally going to be... Didn't they want to put it in the first one, but they couldn't manage it?
Yeah, they just didn't know where to put it.
Yeah. Three solved that issue by just
putting it in,
throwing it after this scene.
Look, again, three, they had literally 6 weeks to come up with the script. And so they're just like, look, what do we have sets for? We're going to put them in.
What has already been like written out? What's a good idea?
And then they just went, okay, we're going to go from this to this, to this, to this, to this, because we've already got those. And then, I don't know, add some screaming here. What's the wife doing?
Is she screaming?
Okay, make her scream. That's how it works. That's how movies get made.
And they still made money. So you can't say that it was a bad idea, I guess.
But critically, I think, you know, how long did it... When did Jurassic World come out? Was that 2015?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to say yes. But we're going to double check that date real quick.
It took over a decade to make another Jurassic Park movie.
Yep.
Oh, man, I'm good.
Well, I mean, but also trilogies were kind of a thing.
Worked so well for Star Wars.
Yeah, like a lot of movies were just trilogies because that's how you did. Once you did three, you were done. I think Harry Potter really changed that up, though.
Yeah, and it changed it for the worse, I think, because it started the splitting one book into two movies trend.
So any more thoughts on Jurassic Park 3?
Well, I haven't seen Jurassic World 2, the Jurassening, or whatever the heck it's called.
Fallen Kingdom.
No, but whatever. That sounds made up.
All right, I'm going to tell you that you've kind of 50% seen it already.
Is it all in the trailers?
No. You've seen Jurassic Park 2, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go.
So Jurassic World is to Jurassic Park as Jurassic World 2, Fallen Kingdom, is to The Lost World, Jurassic Park 2.
And I heard it was bad. Is that true?
It's a very exciting movie.
There's a lot of explosions.
That's not a yes or no, though.
It's not a good movie, but you will enjoy watching it, probably. It would have been better in theaters.
So I'm just thinking of the degradation of quality, because you have the original Jurassic Park. It's really good. Jurassic Park 2, it's okay. I mean, it's not as good as the original, but it's a fun movie. And then Jurassic Park 3 is down here. Is the curve or slope steeper or shallower?
Well, I'm going to say shallower just because Jurassic World didn't start as high.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, that's true. So once they make Jurassic World 3, it could get...
It could go up.
It's a race to the bottom.
They could be better.
It could also be Jurassic Galaxy.
I mean, Jurassic Galaxy, of course, is the bottom. If the Jurassic Galaxy trilogy...
So anything else we want to talk about?
Maybe just how hard it was to think of what our least favorite dinosaur was.
No, I had mine off the bat.
That's true. You did have yours off the bat. I didn't even think of Barney.
That's because we have purged him from our memory so well. It took me a while to think of a least favorite dinosaur, and I was going through books and movies to try and figure out what my least favorite dinosaur was going to be. And then I'm like, well, you'd brought up Godzilla. So I'm like, what if I go to near dinosaurs?
Fake dinosaurs?
That's when I was able to go. I'm like, I don't like Glavinus. Like, he's very cool. He's a very cool design, but we are not friends.
But yeah, get a Nokia phone, I guess.
Oh,
and
are they even still around?
Yes.
You can't destroy a Nokia phone. Only in the fires of Mount Doom.
No, that was the original, the 8810. That one you couldn't destroy. I'm pretty sure Nokias break like the Dickens now. Aren't they running on the Windows Mobile? Or is that finally dead?
Richard's surfing the web to find out what they've done. But
I think Microsoft bought them.
Now that we're done with the movie, I think we just have to thank our patrons.
Listen, patrons, if you were trapped on a dinosaur island, I would definitely lie to get a hotshot paleontologist to save you.
I would lie to get some mercenaries, the kind who would invade Venezuela, to come help.
I'd try to call somebody in the State Department. Sure.
Only because you guys keep us you guys keep us going. Help us keep this thing running. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you disagree with us that Jurassic Park 3 is not is a great movie, maybe, you can tell us on Facebook. Oh, leave a like anyways.
Or you can tell us what your least favorite dinosaur is on Twitter in 248 characters or less at PlotSpacklePod.
If you have a longer dissertation on why Jurassic Park 3 is the masterpiece of the Jurassic Park trilogy, let us know in an email at plotspacklepodcast@gmail.com. Also, please review and rate us on iTunes. That helps us get views or listens. We're not you. Oh, shoot. That was YouTube.
Yeah, it helps other people hear. It helps other people see us on their podcast algorithm.
And maybe give us a try.
I mean, we've been around for about 2 years now. So here's hoping for another two or three.
Seriously, though, Eric, where did you get the dinosaur pee?
Listen, you can buy anything on Amazon nowadays, and Prime shipping is worth it if you're stuck on an island.